never know where life will lead us or what may hinder us along the way. But while every day can feel like one big question mark, it doesn't have to. With the right insights, strategies, and solutions from Western and Southern Financial Group, together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful about sling and stuff. Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
It's draft season, so the obvious next step is mock draft season. That's what today's show is going to be. Mock draft. Straight in again.
You've startled me once again with your cold open.
Today, we are going to be breaking down Mel Kiper's mock draft. The godfather, the man with the best hairdo in the business. That's where you start, right?
You're not the one with the best hairdo in the business?
I don't have a hairdo anymore.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I am no longer possessing of a hairdo. The hair is gone, therefore the dew is gone.
That's right.
But Kiper's still there. Almost. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back. I think the most consistent and best hairdo in the business over the last several decades belongs to Howie Long.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Who has had the same flat top haircut since the early 80s.
You know, and it's like easy to... The maintenance is very easy on a haircut like that.
Uh-huh.
You can't tell whether he's gone bald or not. It's just like, because it's so short, like you're like, I don't know.
Like, but that feels like one where if you've had a flat top for almost 40 years at this point, you're stuck with it forever. You can't ever change that. 40 years with the same flat top haircut. You can't decide like tomorrow we're going to go with like, you know, something totally different.
But even Kiper, like if Kiper cut his hair short, we'd have a problem.
Yes. Yeah, he's stuck with it as well.
Be a massive problem in the NFL.
With his one where it's just the sort of swept back quaff thing, you could play around with some partings or whatever. You could change that a little
bit. But he hasn't, though.
No, I know, but you could. Whereas with Howie Long, there's nowhere to go from the flat top. Like you're stuck with it.
No, you got to wait till the pushes, and at this point in he's an old man, so
that's what I'm saying, like you're stuck with it. That's a rough spot to be. That's like Steve with the thing, like whatever that is.
Is that a pompadour?
I think Eric used to call it the full Jerry, or the was it the full Jerry, the Jerry curl. I mean, again, you're kind of stuck with it. There's nowhere to go.
If he cuts his hair, PFF would have to fire him. Like, that would be
the funny thing is, like, he thinks that, like, oh, I couldn't. I'd look weird with short hair. But there was one point where he came back with one of the most ridiculous haircuts I've ever seen. Like, he went to some new person that isn't experienced with the full Jerry and did something like Shirley Temple to his hair. And at one, like, Rick did up this Photoshop mock of him with just short, normal hair. And it's like, you actually look normal. Like, you've boxed yourself into this world where you think you're stuck with that, but if you just had a normal haircut, you would be fine and nobody would think anything different.
All of the money that we get from subscriptions, from ad revenue for these shows, they go towards Photoshopping us with different hairstyles.
You would be amazed the feedback we get on haircut discussions from this podcast. Speaking of feedback, NFLpodcast@pff.com. You complained yesterday that there had been no feedback about dinosaurs, about your questions about dinosaurs. So somebody emailed us in. What was the guy's email address? Or email, the name, who sent it in? The dinosaurs, dinosaur question, there we go. Philly Joe sent us in an email asking, could we get players in the Super Bowl to dinosaurs comp segment? And you've actually done this.
Yeah, this took me a long time.
Yeah.
I've been spending since the end of last show.
Right.
That's all I've been doing.
So we're actually doing this.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Okay.
And so, the first one isn't even a dinosaur. There's actually two non-dinosaurs on here, but.
Yeah, this seems, I mean, look, just looking at the names and dinosaurs here, this feels very lazy. I'm not going to lie. Like, are these just the dinosaurs you can remember from Jurassic Park?
Well, or? So I did this on purpose. These are all just,
oh, you've
except
kept
one. They're all Jurassic Park dinosaurs,
so
because
kept it like,
these are the dinosaurs that we know, like collectively.
So you've kept it accessible for people that
very
don't
accessible.
Have a deep dinosaur experience.
I think we have six of them.
Okay.
Very accessible.
Go on, man.
Seven of them, actually.
What have you got?
All right. So the first one, not a dinosaur.
Yes.
To start off right off the bat.
So immediately we've been this thing as a concept.
Chris Jones.
Right.
The Megalodon.
The Megalodon.
As you can see it here, the biggest, second biggest like sea-dwelling creature of all time, the blue okay. whale.
The blue whale.
The blue whale is the that we currently have.
It feels like the blue whale would get messed up by a megalodon.
Yeah, it can't compete with a megalodon.
Right.
And the reason why the blue whale became as big as it is, and it still is because the megalodon went extinct.
Okay.
So the megalodon is like three times the size of the great white shark.
Yeah. Okay, so Chris Jones is a megalodon. For people listening, you probably want to check out the YouTube because there's graphics attached to this. All right, who's next?
Devonta Smith, Velociraptor, has to be.
Does it though?
Well,
see, here's the thing. Here's where I'm gonna expose your quite clearly surface level understanding of dinosaurs, right? Because the Velociraptor was not the same size as it was in Jurassic Park. The Velociraptor was like this little chicken sized thing. What they actually did was essentially steal, I think, something called a Deinonychus or something, which is the Velociraptor sized thing. And they were like, well, we'll just call that, nobody knows how to pronounce Deinonychus or whatever it is. So we'll call it a raptor and we'll use that.
They found something in Utah called the Utah Raptor after the movies came out that is probably closer to the Velociraptor that they used in the movies.
So you think that Devonta Smith is actually a Deinonychus or a Utah Raptor rather than a Velociraptor.
Right, but we want it to be accessible.
Small and thin as he is, he's not chicken sized.
No, he's not. He doesn't have feathers either.
Also true.
Okay. Yeah, that was the thing. They gave it feathers and then anyways.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
All right, next is Javon Hargrave.
Yes.
The T-Rex. Now, I understand the T-Rex apex predator, maybe Javon Hargrave, not the best player on the Eagles defense
or in
the game. However, Javon Hargrave has 18th percentile arm length.
Stumpy little arms.
Stumpy little arms, just like the T-Rex. And Javon Hargrave, 18% pass rush win rate this year,
which is very high.
So having a great year. So maybe he is the apex predator.
Okay. What did we say Hutchinson's percentile was for arm length?
That was really, like 11, I think.
Really?
Hutchinson, I would have put Hutchinson if this was.
All right, next up.
All right, AJ Brown is the, I can't even pronounce it,
Pteranodon.
Pteranodon.
There you go. Yeah.
Pteranodon. The wingspan, everything. I think this wingspan flies down the field.
Yeah. Flies down the field, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, next.
Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Uh-huh.
Dilophosaurus.
That's the one with the
venom,
spitting.
Yeah,
thing.
The spitting. Because he's, you know, he's a trash talker. He spits venom.
I get it. Okay.
So here's the issue with the Dilophosaurus from the movie.
Yeah.
Evolutionarily speaking.
Yes.
You wouldn't both have the frills and the venom. You would only need one defense mechanism.
Okay.
So the frills is a defense mechanism.
Is it?
Potentially. It could be a sexual mating call.
Right.
And the spitting is definitely a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
So you would only need one. And they believe it's just the frills that Dilophosaurus has. And it's bigger than it is in the movie. That's one of the things unlike the Velociraptor, they shrunk it down.
Okay.
All right. And the last one, the Eagles offensive line are just a bunch of triceratops.
Collectively. Okay.
I mean, look at that. Look at that like plate. That it has. Like, you
it's got a very good, that's a well-built offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Like low stance, you know, padding.
Yeah.
There's a lot to work with there from an offensive line point of view.
That's how they found Jordan Mailata.
Excavated from some some desert somewhere that used to be a swamp.
Exactly.
Okay. Perfect.
That's it. We got it done.
All right. So
and we're all correct. Like everyone understands what I just did was perfectly scientific.
Absolutely. So that's proof that if you send us in absurd emails asking for comparisons of things to other things, we'll do it. We'll do pretty much anything
on this
show.
Baby.
Right. Almost. So okay, that was that. Again, we're almost there to our $2,000 goal of the charity drive at my pinned tweet at PFF_Sam and hopefully the description of this podcast. we are going to make Steve do rugby skills if and when we make that. I think I've also got us a like an outfit sponsorship for this. I did some cold calling yesterday, and I think we've got one on the hook. So we have a ball and a Steve-sized jersey, I think, on the way for this, in addition to the people, the professional players sending us video of this stuff. So get us over the hump, get us up to our goal, and then we can do our rugby thing. It'll be a pretty cool video, I think, once we get that done. All right, are we on to the actual show now?
That was the actual show. I'm out of here.
That was the actual show? Okay. Yeah. Well, before we get into the godfather of mock drafting, Mel Kiper, we're going to talk about the best Sunday in sports. Obviously, Super Bowl Sunday. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57, has all the Super Bowl action you need. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get in on Super Bowl 57 excitement with DraftKings Happy Hour Super Boosts. Check the DraftKings Sportsbook app every day between 6 and 9 Eastern to see what prop will be boosted. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code PFF. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code PFF. All right, Mel Kiper, the mock draft. It started. We got what this one's from. It's a little bit old. So January 25th was when Kiper, I believe it's his first mock draft, went up. Obviously, there's only 31 picks this year because Miami, you know, tampered and lost one. Let's start with the top. Number one, Chicago Bears. He went with what you were suggesting yesterday, Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia. And every time I read a mock draft now, the first thing I need to know is, were you considering trades, or do you actually think that the Chicago Bears are going to sit there at number one and use this pick on presumably not a quarterback? And in his first line, he says that he was thinking about trades. So this is like he thinks the Bears might actually sit there at number one and take the best defensive player on the board.
I think that the Chicago Bears should come away with Jalen Carter in this draft.
Somehow.
Right. Somehow, right? Now, is it by... It would be better for them if they could trade back to two or three or whatever and still pick up Jalen Carter, right? That is the goal. But I think I'm not like mad at them if they sit at one. Like, you would love it. I get it. But I'm not mad at them if they sit at one and take the kind of consensus best player in the draft. I mean, him and Will Anderson.
So you would rather them sit at one and take Jalen Carter than trade back, get a haul, and miss out on Jalen Carter?
Yeah, probably.
Because I think
at some point you need good. You need like, you can't just live in a world where we're like, oh well, we're gonna trade back and we're gonna pick up these third round picks, the second round picks, and maybe even a pick next year, like a first round pick next year. That would be something different. But we need good players on our football team, right? We can't just live in a world where we're just gonna take a whole bunch of chances. I understand draft is a crapshoot type of situation, but I do think we eventually need to go and find good players. And we've talked about this whole week about defensive linemen being a quote-unquote solved problem when it comes to college pro projections. We have a pretty good idea that Jalen Carter is going to be a really good pro. Mm-hmm. Obviously, anything can happen. So I want them to have Jalen Carter on their roster next year.
Sure. I mean, I would be prepared, though, if I'm Chicago, to miss out on Jalen Carter for the greater good, because I think they need more than that. Like, that the good thing about the Bears is that they need everything, right? So they're not in a position where it's like, we have to come out of this draft with Jalen Carter. He might be the best individual player in the draft, but if they had to trade down, you know, if the best offer on the table is coming from, you know, 9 or whatever, right? And they have to trade basically down outside the top 10 or to the edge of the top 10, and they get a first round pick next year and they get some extra stuff this year, and they set themselves up really well. And instead, at that position, you miss out on Jalen Carter, you miss out on Will Anderson, but you get like the best wide receiver in the draft plus all that haul. I mean, I think that's a better deal for them because they need so much.
No, I mean, like, I understand. I'm on board with that. I just think that, like, I think you do need elite players somewhere. That's what I keep going back to. It's like, you need elite players somewhere, and you have a chance to get this elite player, like, right off the bat. And again, I don't think it's really should be the first overall pick, but I also don't think they should trade back all the way like that deep, what you're saying, like all the way 9. Like, I'm really maxing out at like 3 or 4, so you can go and get a Carter or an Anderson and then like be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think picking at 4, like trading with the Colts, I think is probably the best case scenario for the Bears, because that, I think, fits the perfect middle ground of, you're probably going to get quite a big haul for that anyway, to move back that far, and you're getting basically a guarantee of one of Will Anderson or Jalen Carter.
The haul from, off the top of my head, from the Jets to the Colts for Darnold
right.
that year. It's a massive haul, and it was only three picks different, I believe.
So I think that's like the best
sort
of compromise of you're trading back, you're getting something, you can probably get a first round pick next year, and because Houston is picking a two, you're almost certain to get one of those two defensive guys, so you don't have to even compromise on who you're going to end up at the end of it all.
Are you entertaining the Bears taking a quarterback at all?
I mean, I think they have to run. We had this, like, this was a discussion on Twitter yesterday. Greg Gabriel, it's just like, all you idiots, they never even thought about it. You're like, well, if they didn't think about it, they're idiots.
Yeah.
Like, you have to at least ask the question. And, you know, people were saying, Bryce Young wouldn't hold a candle next to Justin Fields as a prospect when they were coming out. You're like, well, the only way of knowing that is if you ask the question and actually run the thought experiment. Like, the whole point is, if you're a smart organization, you should be checking this kind of stuff out, even if your conclusion is, no, Fields is our guy. We don't think that these guys are anywhere near where he is. We'll move on. But I think they should absolutely be asking that question. I think you stick with Justin Fields. The thing that makes it most tricky to me is the fact that not you've burned them, but you're 2 years down of the contract, which is arguably the most valuable thing, right, is the rookie on that rookie deal. And you're halfway through that now. Without really knowing.
Their problem is, like, you know, you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts and you can really picture Fields becoming that type of player. They just don't have the roster around him at all.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like,
you've
compromised the evaluation entirely by what's around him. So that just muddies the picture. All right. Number two, Houston Texans. The first quarterback comes off the board and it's CJ Stroud from Ohio State, not Bryce Young.
You know, you could go with any of these guys. I'm like, I think I'm a Bryce Young guy, but I'm like willing to be okay with not being a Bryce Young guy because of the size.
Yeah. But that's it though. That's it.
Because everything else, he's a magician. He's electric. He's a playmaker. He does everything. He's just like, he would be like the smallest quarterback taken in so long.
Full disclosure here, you know, Mike Renner does the draft 24/7, all 365 days of the year. Trev is in it the whole time. You and I and Steve come to the draft way later than that. We're in the NFL, and then we get to the draft once the sort of season starts to wind down. So this is a much more surface level thing. We got plenty of time to get into the players in their entirety. When I saw this, I hadn't even watched a lot of CJ Stroud. And I went and watched him yesterday, specifically after seeing that Kuiper had him as the first quarterback off the board. Because I was like, all right, I've watched Bryce Young, I've watched Levis, I've watched Richardson, I haven't seen a lot of Stroud, so let's go through. And I'm like, I can't really see how you can take Stroud ahead of Bryce Young, other than literally saying, I can't draft a guy that size.
That's it.
That's
100% it.
But
he's not the playmaker. I mean, the Georgia game illuminated me a little bit to the playmaking ability.
But doesn't that also like terrify you a little bit? It's like, the Georgia game, CJ Stroud was incredible in the Georgia game and incredible at all the things people said he's not good at.
Mm-hmm.
Which, on the one hand, it's like, great, if he can do that against the best defense in the nation, like, he can do that at the next level. On the other hand, if he only really did it once and it just happened that it was in the most spectacular situation and the hardest assignment, that's kind of worrying to me.
I know you're not supposed to scout the helmet logo. Mm-hmm. That's a dumb cliche, but like people say it all the time. I find it hard after watching Justin Fields to look at CJ Stroud playing the same offense.
I hate this offense. I hate it.
Great
so
receivers,
much.
Great offensive line. They throw the ball down the field because they just can. They can protect it and they can get open down the field all the time. It's hard for me to look at, because it's funny because we look at, you know, if we look at a guy like Hendon Hooker coming out from the Tennessee offense and Josh Heupel's offense, and that's like pretty fake. Like, none of that stuff translates to the NFL, okay? It just go balls down the sideline.
Right.
Does not translate to the NFL. And we look at this and we see all these, like, great throws. Like, oh, he's splitting the safeties on, like, a seam ball. And it's all really good. And it's like, Justin Fields did the same thing. And he looked the exact same way. And then it's like, well, once you get into the NFL, it's like, can you do that consistently? And these windows are just so much smaller. Like, the type of throws exist in the NFL. Just the windows are so much smaller. And the protection is not as good. And that's, I think, what scares me about the Ohio State offense. It's like a real offense, but then it's like, then I'm just like, okay, well, is there any real offense in college football that can translate?
It's so where I think the helmet scouting or the same school scouting thing, I think there's some validity to it, is like when the offense is the same and you have sort of seen things from that offense moving to the next level that cause you concern, I think it's valid. Like when Justin Fields was coming out, I hated watching his tape because you're like, this is not, we're so far away from what this is going to look like in the NFL. Like his entire tape was basically drop back, stare down a target, wait till he's open, and then fire the ball pinpoint to his hands. You're like, okay, that's fine, but that's not an NFL offense. And it's so far away from what he's going to need to do in an NFL offense. It's very difficult to project it forward. And Stroud, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, okay, this is fine. It's working great, but this is not applicable generally to what he's going to be doing at the next level. And all of his best throws are the same. It's, I have one-on-one, I'm going to drop the ball into a bucket 40 yards downfield, which again, it's just the number of times where you have that throw available to you in the NFL is minimal. So if all of your best stuff is that, and the question marks are all much more surrounding like routine down-to-down quarterback processing problems, now we're raising some pretty big red flags.
I also think it's hard to look at two specific examples as the Alabama's offense over the last 4 years and Ohio State's offense over the last 4 years, again, the receiver talent. It's hard to overlook the receiver talent, man. Like those guys, like four deep.
I mean, just every the talent disparity across the board. Like Alabama runs concepts that you couldn't even dream about running in the NFL.
Yeah, it's just like every concept is after a deep crossing concept, and like they're running with like five man protection. It's like, all right, well, that's
it's like that play would be dead after two seconds in the NFL. Yeah. You can't run that,
and they run it all the time. It's not like you can get away with it like once in a while in the NFL if you set it up right. But like,
I mean, we've talked before about the difference between like Alabama open and NFL open. Like it's a different picture. A quarterback coming from that system has to completely rewire what they're looking at, because it's not the same at all. It's a different world.
But Houston is definitely quarterback though. It has to be. It has to be D'Amico saying, this is my guy. You know what I mean? We're going to start this franchise. You know, we're going to rebuild this franchise with a quarterback. That's it.
Interestingly, Kiper has Stroud behind Will Levis in his rankings. And I think I'm with him.
Oh yeah, but I don't really understand that. Like, what is the fit? Like, you don't, especially with the Texans who have like so many, like a blank canvas of players on their team. It's like,
I mean, I'm starting to come to the, like, if you can get past the size thing, I think Bryce Young is the clear number one quarterback in this class.
Yeah.
If you can't, I think I would rather take the chance on Levis than Stroud, given what I've seen from the two of them. And I'm less keen on Richardson conceptually than any of those guys. Number three, Arizona Cardinals, Will Anderson.
The Arizona Cardinals still don't have a head coach.
True. Yeah.
It's been someone said, I saw a tweet yesterday, and
they're not alone in that, by the way. Like there's a few teams still out there digging.
It's, I think Cardinals and Colts are the only two. But the Colts, so the difference between the Colts and the Cardinals is like,
well, they're just killing time until they hire.
Yeah, they're
Jeff
killing
Saturday.
Time, but they're putting out so many newsworthy items, let's say. We're going through interviews with this brand. We're on our third set of interviews, and blah, blah, blah. Everyone's talking about it. No one's talking about the Cardinals. I did see a tweet yesterday talking about how I think one of the issues, and I don't remember who this is from, but I believe it's from, you know, one of these source people, that they're not sure about Kyler's contract. No one wants to go and stick their nose out for Kyler and be attached to Kyler, which I think is ridiculous, but that's kind of where we are with the Cardinals.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot because Murray's not only the contract and whatever you think of Murray generally, but he got hurt so late in the season.
Yeah.
He's going to be missing for a while. Yeah. Like this is not an easy spot to just jump into and have success in year one. So any coach, it's a bit like you kind of need the guarantee of you can't hold this year against me, right? Like if we stink, it's not on me. Like I don't have anything to work with yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure they do that.
No, I know, but like
sports anymore.
I mean, that's why you need the 6-year contract, right, or whatever. You'd be like, okay, we'll have the understanding that I won't be blamed for year one, but assuming that that's not how the world works, I need
some guarantees.
Many guaranteed years attached to this. But I think Will Anderson makes a lot of sense for them. Like best pass rusher in the draft, that's or best fine. Edge rusher. They need edge. We talked about that on yesterday's show or Tuesday's show, whenever it was. I mean, that's just a good fit, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with this fit. Anderson, again, a consensus best edge rusher. So go get him, right? Like this is kind of a no-brainer. Obviously, they aren't getting rid of Kyler Murray anytime soon. You get a guy like Jacoby Brissett to come in there and play Andy Dalton, whatever. And then you live with that for 8 weeks. Honestly, right. It could be 8 weeks. That's what I remember. That was the first case scenario when it happened. Could be 8 weeks. So, but yeah, anyways, the defense has been so bad, and it's been pretty bad on the defensive line, especially in certain areas, edge rusher. So Will Anderson.
Number four, the Indianapolis Colts get Bryce Young, quarterback from Alabama. That to me would be like an absolute dream scenario for the Colts. They don't have to trade anywhere. They get to sit at four and get what I think most people would believe to be the best quarterback in the draft.
He's just, I cannot believe how good he is as a quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, he is so smart. Just from as a pocket passer, he is so smart. And then he adds that playmaking ability that is kind of like just unique. The way he's able to move around and throw from different arm slots and all that stuff. It's just like, yeah, he's our size.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem. Right. I can't play in the NFL.
I'm not sure that's why, though. The thing to me that jumped out when I was watching Bryce Young is how good his turnovers are, like how good his low light reel is. When you look at like, okay, what are his biggest mistakes, and how, like, is there something that's consistently happening here that's breaking down and going wrong, right? And when you look at it, it's like half of these plays I almost want to credit him for. It's like he's throwing with so much anticipation that he's seen something that should happen and then put the ball in the air, and something happens deep downfield to prevent that from happening. Like, his receiver gets cut off, he falls over, not fall over, we don't, but like his receiver gets cut off, he doesn't quite make it to where, like a DB ends up breaking in front, making the play. But there's sort of, he plays with so much anticipation that it can actually get him into trouble sometimes, which seems like about as good of a negative trait as you could possibly have for a quarterback.
He had an interception against LSU this year's LSU game, where he kind of like got out of the pocket. They're on like the 5 yard line. He got out of the pocket, made an insane play, and then threw the ball kind of around the waist of a defender who was like right in his face. And it got, and he threw it a little behind and like got intercepted. But like, that shit is like, that's quarterback at the NFL level. Again, I hope it works out. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you look at him, you look at the way he plays quarterback, and you're like, I want this guy to be good, because this is super fun. This is super entertaining. We're trying to be entertained here.
Because like everything, he's good at everything. Yeah. The only flaw is the dude is tiny.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, his listed size isn't too bad, but every picture of him you see makes him look smaller. Like, you know, when you're standing next to Kyler Murray being made look small, that's not good. Kyler Murray is not only the shortest quarterback in the NFL, but is built like a brick by comparison. Like, if you're going to be small and lightweight, it's just, it felt like we were sort of past this of short quarterbacks and, you know, hating on them and blah, blah, blah. But
this is extreme. This would be like one of the shortest quarterbacks and
it's
smallest
like,
quarterback we've
what
drafted.
What this is like is the DeVonta Smith conversation. It's like we were kind of past short, light, or small, lightweight receivers, and then DeVonta Smith came along, and it's like, well, you said you didn't care, but what if I put 166 on the table? And then you're like, that is really small. Now it's like, oh, you thought you were cool with short quarterbacks? So what if I gave you a short and skinny quarterback? And like, God damn it. So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating one to watch pan out. Number five, Seattle Seahawks, Will Levis.
So this is the first one where I don't think the position matches what I would do.
Okay.
Because I think that you have to sign Geno. I think he did more than enough to show that he has, that this is not a one-year thing. And then it's like, now you're not that far. Like, if Geno does the same thing he does this year, you're not that far if you can go and find, I don't know what it is. We talked about a second edge rusher to pair with Nwosu. There's a whole bunch of other positions that they could go for.
Were you concerned by like the second half of the year from Geno?
I think there's a pretty big correlation when you look at the tackle play in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Two rookie tackles going through a really good first half of the season and then not so good second half of the season. And I think you're still excited about those two players. I mean, mm-hmm. It seems like they hit on both tackles, Abraham Lucas and Charles Cross. So I think you're pretty, you feel good going forward. Like, hey, if we can get the tackle play, if we get a protection sorted out, these guys going into year two, then I think we'll be okay. So that's my kind of workaround for the lower efficiency metrics, the lower PFF grade in the second half of the season.
To me, it also comes down to like, what's the asking price? Because like, if he's coming out of that season going, I'm kind of old, this is my one shot, it's never happening again, I need all of the money right now.
Yeah.
Like, and if he's putting, you know, if his demands are like top of the market quarterback money or even anything approaching it, if you're Seattle, it's like, I mean, we have the number 5 overall pick. There's probably a quarterback there. I don't know that we can do that. You know, we're going to need to have some kind of middle tier, middle class quarterback contract here. Otherwise, I think we have to be prepared to walk away from that.
Yeah, I just like my projection of Geno is that he's a top 10 quarterback potentially. Like there's a top 10 quarterback in there for sure after we watched this year. So then it's like, all right, well, we're good there. And like at 32 years old, like he'll turn 33 in during the middle of the season. That's like young for a quarterback, right? Like you can give him 3-4 years and you're not worried about decline yet.
Sort of. But then Russell Wilson is like, what, 34?
Different. Russell Wilson, very unique quarterback.
True. But the more, you know, I think the one thing about the sort of the weird world we're in right now of like, when is a quarterback old, is I think styles play a huge part of this. And like Geno definitely relies on athleticism. Like if you take that away.
I think he's so much better in the pocket right now than Russell. And so I think that's why, again, that's why I could, if he was 36, maybe a different story, but at 32, turning 33, like I said, I think we're okay with thinking that you have 3 years with him. And again, if it's the same level that we saw this year, if you can go and then add a top 10 pick at any position, right? Outside of tackle, outside of receiver.
Yeah.
I know they're probably going to look for a wide receiver 3, but like outside of receiver, like, man, you could go and find someone, you know, maybe a second corner, maybe a nickel, I don't know, anywhere on the defensive line like we talked about.
I mean, the good thing,
you can really, really make this roster look really good next year.
The good thing about this pick is it'll take care of itself before, you know, the draft. Like it's right now, it's Levis or Geno. We'll know the answer to that by the time this rolls around because they're going to have to make a decision on it. Number 6, the Detroit Lions. So last pick, number 5 was the Denver pick for Russell Wilson. So Seattle picking in the top 5, despite having a pretty good year. Number 6 is Detroit from the Rams. That's part of the trade they made. They have, or Mel has Detroit picking Tyree Wilson, our giant defensive end from Texas Tech. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, so I love Tyree Wilson. Love him. I think he really is a top 10 player in this draft. Do you need to go edge again? Because Hutchinson has kind of worked out. James Houston
Was really good.
Now it's like, okay, is he a great, like maybe first down, second down player? I don't know. So I don't know if they need to go defensive end necessarily.
But also stylistically, it feels like Wilson is a little bit redundant with Hutchinson. Like I could see kind of picking a player that you think might upgrade James Houston or like a more surefire James Houston as a compliment. I'm not sure I would go for a player that's so stylistically similar to Hutchinson.
But with that said, as I'm thinking about it, like I'm not mad at the pick at all because I think you need two defensive ends. If James Houston is not an every down player, then you probably do need a second defensive end.
Yeah, but also like Houston was such a surprise because there were like 3 other young guys that they expected to man that spot.
Yeah.
And then it's like none of them panned out last year. I don't know that you necessarily rule them all out going forward.
For sure.
So I don't know. It's not where I would go if I was sort of searching either position need or like best player in the draft spot, I don't think.
Yeah, but and then the other thing is just like where the other positions that they need, like are there top 10 players at that position? And Tyree Wilson is a top 10 player. I don't know if there's a linebacker, an interior defensive lineman outside of Jalen Carter, a cornerback that like really you would look at and say, okay, this is a top 10 player. This is a guy we need to take at 6.
Right.
Tyree Wilson is definitely a guy you need to take at 6. So I'm like talking myself into it as we're talking.
Okay. I don't love that one. Number 7, Las Vegas Raiders picking Peter Skoronski, the Northwestern offensive tackle, widely considered to be the best tackle in the draft. I mean, they need an offensive line.
Yeah, the only thing is always going to be like, well, he's going to have to play right tackle because Colton Miller's there. Like, their one good offensive lineman plays left tackle.
Right.
They need offensive line help. They've needed offensive line help for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this would be a perfect, if you can get him to play right tackle. I mean, I assume you're not going to move Colton Miller there, but if you get him to play right tackle, I know maybe they move him to guard. I always hate the moving to guard stuff because I just don't know enough. But if you can move him to the other side, and he's good. He's obviously a top 10 player. So.
Yeah, the move to guard thing is always a weird projection. Yeah. And I'm not sure if there's ever that much logic attached to it other than like this guy looks shape-wise.
That's always the
arm length thing, which always annoys me. Particularly when you see a player that like stylistically plays like tackle, but he has short arms, and they're immediately saying, well, you're a guard. So, well, okay, but if he doesn't play like a guard, he's probably going to be bad even if he has short arms. Yeah. Like, you're not helping him. So that is a weird one. I think this pick makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't hate them going for one of the edge rushers.
Yeah.
To give somebody
a lot of needs on that team.
Yeah, to give them somebody opposite Max Crosby,
They could go quarterback. Like if there's one of the top four on the board at that point, like,
or they're the team. I mean, we had a listener bet that Bryce Young would go number one overall to the Raiders, that the Raiders would trade up to one to get their quarterback. So a lot of ways they could go. Number eight, the Atlanta Falcons, Miles Murphy, defensive end from Clemson.
Well, like, defensive end is a huge need for them. I think
anything on defense.
Yeah, anything on defense. I just think I would not pick Miles Murphy in the top 10. I don't think I would pick him in the top 20, to be honest. So that to me is just like positional need, 100%. You got to pick the right one. I don't think this would be the right one, but I'm willing to be wrong about that. The tape is just not. He's like the fourth best defensive lineman on Clemson this year.
I've seen a lot of people down on Brian Burzee as well, yeah. the defensive tackle from Clemson.
No, the guy that stands out every time you watch Clemson's defensive line is KJ Henry, who's going to go in like the fourth or fifth round or third round or something like that. He's got juice. He's got everything. I said it on Wednesday, I think. Murphy just no bend. Power and explosion, sure, but one move, no bend. It's just not enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty much anywhere on defense, the Falcons could pick here. Like, they need
anywhere.
Their offense actually kind of fun, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Obviously, quarterback is still a bit of a question mark, but
I'm not even mad if they go quarterback. I loved Desmond Ridder coming out. He flashed a bit in his like four starts or whatever. Mm. Was bad against in his first two starts. So you're like, okay, it's his first two starts, like whatever. And then had a good game against the Cardinals, but that's the Cardinals defense. And then had a good game against like the backups of the Bucks. So it's like, where are we right now with Desmond? Again, I loved him, so I'm still sticking with him, but I could see him go quarterback as well.
I mean, a lot of it depends what the kind of quarterback breakdown looks like, because sitting at number eight, you're kind of within touching distance of quarterbacks that you maybe didn't expect to be. Like I said, this is one of those sort of pivot points of the draft, which actually always seems to be Atlanta for some reason. But like, there's a bunch of different ways they could go with this pick that I think would make sense. Number nine, Carolina. Mel has them selecting Anthony Richardson, quarterback from Florida.
You hate to like, we're almost good. We talked about this yesterday, but like taking traits, quarterbacks, to take IQ, like we're almost kind of going in the opposite way where it's like, okay, well, we're just going to take the guy who is the traits guy, but like hasn't shown really that much at all. Malik Willis obviously comes to mind. He ends up going not in the first round, right? The third or fourth round. So
I remember you go back a year.
People think he was going to be the number one overall pick.
Number two to Detroit.
Right, exactly.
Was talked about a lot from Malik Willis. And then if it wasn't two, it was Detroit's second pick at 30 or whatever that was. Yeah. Like, he was being talked about as a first round quarterback, and like if you're gonna gamble on one of these guys, it would be Malik Willis because of the upside. And we talked about it.
Richardson is probably a better put together passer right now than Willis was last year, but it's still a long way to go. I do think that when I watch Richardson, it's like he really wants to, in the same way that like we had these wrong ideas about Lamar coming out. Like, Lamar was like trying his best to be a pocket passer. And he would only take off when he would exhaust his reads. Richardson's not quite that. But he does try. He really does try. So, like, I can see that, like, him, like, clearly he gets it, but like maybe the the vision isn't right there yet. So like I like him more than I definitely like Willis, but then we're just banking on something that he hasn't shown enough of, which is like, you know, throwing to the right receiver accurately, which is like a pretty important part of the job.
It would be, man, it's an interesting pick for a team like Carolina, because you're like, I would imagine a team probably wants to bring Richardson along slowly. And by that, I mean not start him for a while. And if you're Carolina, can you get away with that? Like, can you really go into the season selling 8 games or a full season of Sam Darnold, knowing that Anthony Richardson is waiting for the opportunity? And even if you can, that's kind of like when Blake Bortles was supposed to sit his entire first year. And like after 3 games or whatever, Chad Henne, it was like, to hell with this, throw him out there. Yeah. Like that feels like what would happen with Sam Darnold. You'd be 4 games into this and you'd be like, I can't take any more. Put him out. Like, let's go.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting the Sam Darnold that we saw the last 4 games of this year. Right. So it's like, yeah, if you take a quarterback, he's probably playing. Unless you really went and got it. Again, the same guys we're going to talk about all the time. It's like Brissett, Dalton, you know, Garoppolo or whatever.
Number 10, Philadelphia, another team with a first round pick, not of their own. Team in the Super Bowl, picking in the top 10 from the Saints. Kalijah Kansi?
Yeah.
Defensive tackle from Pitt. This is a guy a lot of people like.
Small.
Yeah.
Undersized, mm-hmm. Pitt
defensive tackle. Are we ringing bells? are we getting flashbacks to whatever it was, 2014?
Yeah, I mean, got moves, great hand usage, can, you know, can string together pass rush moves, can do all that stuff, get off blocks. Again, it's like, well, he's 6'2", 280, right? So it's like, is that a top 10 player? I think the tape and like the technique is probably a top 10 player, but I don't know if you can do that consistently to guards in the NFL level. There's only one Aaron Donald, right?
Oh yeah,
as we know.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
but I would say like I do like them taking a three technique.
Sure.
I think that's you pair him next to Jordan Davis, going to be there for a long time. They had to go out and find the two guys they brought in, Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph, right, mm-hmm. to kind of beef up the interior. So three tech, I'm not mad at that at all.
The Eagles are also one of those teams that, like, even if he isn't an every down player, it doesn't matter. Like, they've got that rotation. They want to be 7 deep at all times. Yeah. He would be like replacing the snaps that Milton Williams has, where he hasn't really become that guy, or if Javon Hargrave leaves and gets paid in the offseason. Yeah. Like, they have a spot for a guy to come in and play 350 snaps as a sort of designated pass rusher as part of that defensive line rotation. And even if he can never become more than that, if he's effective at that, that's fine for them. Now, you can argue, is that worth a top 10 overall pick? Maybe not, but it wouldn't be a bad pick if he became that player.
No, at all. I don't think that's, like, the tape is so nasty. Like, I highly recommend going to watch him because he does kill guards.
Do you think the Aaron Donald thing will help, or?
Yeah, I think it does
help. We talk about it, don't. Same helmet scouting is stupid, right? But undersized defensive tackle out of Pitt.
There it is.
It compares itself. You don't even need to, like, that can't hurt, right? The fact that Aaron Donald did that and he gets to sort of at least pretend that he can be Aaron Donald 2.0 for a bit. But a lot of people are talking him up as like the guy that's impressing the most when they actually turn on tape. Number 11, Tennessee Titans, Paris Johnson Jr., Ohio State offensive tackle.
I mean, offensive line ended up being such a horror mess for
disaster.
Them. Dennis Daly, you can't put this guy on the field. So, yeah, offensive tackle. The issue is going to be like, what do they do with Taylor Lewan? Like, is that?
I mean, Taylor Lewan was saying they're going to cut him.
Like, okay, so there you go.
There's no chance that I get brought back.
Yeah, so then you would pair Paris Johnson with like his former teammate Nicolas Petitfrère.
That's nice.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can tell you've been up in Canada for a while.
So I think this is a good pick. That, like I said, that offensive line was brutal last year without Taylor Lewan. And if you're again saying Taylor Lewan will not be there next year, then tackle is
lowest graded offensive line in the NFL. Ranked 32nd in PFF's offensive line rankings, just crawled off the bottom of the league in terms of yards before contact on average over the season. They averaged 1, I think. The lowest was the Texans at 0.9 or 0.8, but they were down the bottom basically all season long, despite Derrick Henry in the backfield. Like, the rushing success that Derrick Henry had was not because the offensive line was generating anything. Yeah. It was like, this is all Derrick Henry here. Number 12, Houston Texans with their second first round pick from Cleveland, Lucas Van Ness, Iowa defensive lineman.
I love him.
Mr. Power.
Yeah, I think, but the nice thing about him, I think, which makes him like, you know, the 12th overall pick and maybe even better, I don't know, but definitely a top 20 pick, is like he does have speed and bend to go with the very obvious power. And that makes him a very interesting prospect. Fits team need. I mean, again, with the Texans, you can go anywhere everything, on defense, yeah. really. But, you know, defensive end was not a great position for them. So, I'm into it.
For teams that have, like, multiple first-round picks, does that change what you would do with the second one? Like, because I think a lot of teams treat, like, a second first-round pick almost as, like, house money. And gamble more, or do like
could you? Oh, right, like and just take a, like a prospect.
Just do something
less,
that they wouldn't necessarily do.
Prospect type
yeah,
of thing.
Do yeah. something that they wouldn't necessarily do if they only had the one first round pick. It feels like they're more willing to gamble or to chase upside yeah. or to sort of to basically it just changes how they approach the thing.
I wonder if there's something with like so the Texans would take a quarterback, and then it's like oh, do you take like a tackle or a receiver? Like, do you pair that quarterback with right. another piece that they're going to interact with? Like, that's possible. And then it's like, yeah, do you think with one pick, like, even if it's not quarterback, if he's like, okay, one pick is like a defensive end who we absolutely know is going to be good because we just know. And then in the second pick, you take some freak athlete who's like, I could see it.
Right. Because I felt that a little bit last year with the Lions. Like I didn't, the idea of taking Malik Willis at number two overall always struck me as a little bit crazy, but I would have been all for taking him with 32 or yeah. wherever they were picking. Because you're like, we already spent our first round pick. We already had Jared Goff. The bottom end of the first round for a dude with this much athletic talent, and let's see what we can create here. I'm kind of okay with that. Like that to me strikes, it is almost certainly bad process.
Yes.
But I kind of like the approach of gambling with that second first round pick.
That's my middle name, bad process. Mm.
It feels like, you know, you can see like where you would go wrong if you ever, like the people that win the lottery, right? And get like $300 million. You know, you can see how you would drive your life right off a cliff with that.
1 year it's gone.
But you can see like the specific ways that you would, you know, ruin yourself if that happened. It's like if I was given an NFL team, this would be where I went wrong, right? Every time I had a second first round pick, I would be drafting some like crazy lunatic potential guy that ended up being like Tony Mandarich every time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't last very long.
No, that would be my downfall, pretty much. Number 13, the New York Jets. This one is fascinating. Jackson Smith and Jigba, wide receiver from Ohio State. First thing I want to point out, his name, Jackson, is spelled J-A-X-O-N, which until I misspelled it, typing it somewhere, I didn't realize what an efficient saving of letters that
Perfect.
Was. He has turned C-K-S into X, and it does the same job. I mean, that's just efficiency I can applaud and get behind.
But can he play X in the NFL?
Oh, look at that. Do you have a take on that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he's a slot guy right now.
Yes. Like that's so he's played almost exclusively in the slot for Ohio State, like 90%+ of his snaps.
The only thing that I again, this is like a good player, probably going to be picked in this range. The Jets, do they need, like he might be really, really good, but it's like, okay, you have Garrett Wilson.
Right.
I know Elijah Moore has not lit the world on fire, but I think that might be quarterback related.
But also, not just that, but seems to be really unhappy there.
That's
like
true.
Agitating
that
a
this
lot.
This is where I think looking at this right now, I can't wrap my head around it. But after free agency, when we see what's up, maybe a little bit more. Because I do think this is a really good receiving core. Could you get it better if Jackson Smith and Jigba is this type of player? Like, yeah, for sure. But they also have other issues too. So I'm like, that's why I'm like, I like the player. Maybe the fit is like just okay for me.
I found him such a weird player to try and get my head around. Like he just, everything about him watching his tape is odd to me. Like his movement pattern is very strange. His running style is odd. Like his gait is unusual. Yeah. You've got this obviously like guy with outside receiver size playing in the slot, all these kinds of things. He also falls over, just slips over and falls more than anybody I think I've ever seen playing football. I actually think, though, that he might be a better X receiver than he is a slot receiver. I actually think his skill set is more suited to playing on the outside than it is where he was lining up for Ohio State, which makes him really interesting because if that's your starting point of actually this guy is better right now, or he's better than he looks right now if you put him in a different position, which actually turns out is more valuable at the next level.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this pick, I was thinking about Justin Jefferson because he played in the slot for LSU in 2019. But the thing with, and then he ends up being a great anywhere receiver, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, Justin Jefferson had a great year in 2018 outside. So we have that on tape. Like you could have went back and said, okay, well, actually, here's like, you know, 300 snaps of him playing X, and it was like really good. On a team that was like okay at that time, we don't have that yet. So I do agree with you that I think that
it's total projection.
Yeah, total projection.
Like, rather than taking a bit and extrapolating.
But the thing is that even if he's a good slot receiver, like that's fine too.
Sure, but
I'm okay with that now as like a first round pick.
Yeah, but like first round pick versus 13 over, like, you know what I mean? There's that's always the discussion with those guys. Like I've always sort of said, well, if you knew a guy was Wes Welker or Julian Edelman or whoever your favorite slot receiver is. Like if you guaranteed that's who he is, how high is that? Or how high should that guy be drafted? Like where is that worth?
Yeah, it's probably because still a second round pick.
I think it might be a first, but I don't think it's 13.
Late, yeah, it's a late first.
Like, like I would take a bottom end of the first round pick for that, but I don't think I would spend 13 overall on it.
This reminds me, we talked about draft bust yesterday. Mm-hmm. And like things we shouldn't do moving forward.
Yep.
This kind of related to slot receivers. Well, it is. It's the Kadarius Toney. It's the guy who was already a gadget player in college. Like all the good guys who become good gadget players in the NFL were real receivers in college. And then they couldn't find it and then they became gadget players. If you're already the gadget player, which Toney was, and there's a guy from this year who I'm forgetting, but like if you're already, Wandale Robinson, I guess, is the other guy. If you're already that player, it's tough, man. Tavon Austin is the best example.
Yeah.
He was already this like multiple piece type of player, but not the greatest receiver.
It's also like if you don't know what you're doing with a guy when you're drafting him, that's just immediately a bad sort of red flag process thing. Like if you were going to do what they did when they traded up to get Tavon Austin, it's like at the very minimum, you should have a extensive idea of how you plan on deploying him in this offense, as opposed to Tavon Austin runs jet sweeps.
Yeah.
The end. That's our plan.
And that I remember looking this up because I think I wrote something about the Giants last year and Daniel Jones and that offense, but like, routes like slant routes and like routes that are caught underneath 5 yards, we always want to believe that there's all these players in the league that are going to take a 5 yard slant and bring it to the house. Like it's just statistically 5 yard slants get caught and they get tackled at 7 yards. Like that's what it is.
Like the space is not there in the NFL relative to college. That's why Reggie Bush wasn't the guy he was in college in the NFL. As talented as Reggie Bush is, you don't have that kind of space to work with. Like NFL defenses are not that inept. And the hash marks are different. Like there just isn't that volume of real estate to do your stuff in. Where are we? Number 13. So we'll get to number 14 in a minute. But first, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. The beautiful metal plaque on the wall. The mugs. We got the Western and Southern logo all over the place.
This is technically the Western and Southern studio.
Right. Correct. And we've also got, Western and Southern colors in the logo, like the whole thing, the whole shebang is set up. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Right, pick number 14. By the way, the other interesting thing about that is that's the first wide receiver off the board, right? That's notable in itself, that's the guy he selected as the first. Number 14, New England Patriots, Devon Witherspoon, cornerback, Illinois.
I think this is like a great fit because they've kind of gone away. The Patriots have kind of gone away from like exclusively playing press man to man, but they still play it a hell of a lot. And Weatherspoon is a great press man to my corner. So just the fit is perfect. Really good player, man. He came out of nowhere this year, but watching a little bit of his film, and he's a really good player.
It also felt like they almost abandoned everything they sort of usually do on defense because they just didn't have the guys that could do it. Like when they went up against teams like Buffalo, it's like, well, we don't have anyone that can go one-on-one with Stephon Diggs. We're not even going to try the stuff we did in the past. Like, when they want to catch you with your Diggs, they're just going to take it.
And you know who did keep trying to do that? The Miami Dolphins.
Right.
Like what happened.
Number 15, Green Bay Packers, Michael Meyer, tight end, Notre Dame.
Look, pass catcher.
First round tight end.
Yeah. He's complete, though. He's like everything. He's going to fall because he won't test as well as like maybe even like a Dalton Kincaid or something like that, who I think a lot of people like and is a good player. But Meyer is like just he's everything. He just does everything. So I think this is a good pick for them. Any type of pass catcher would have been a good pick for them. We've been saying it for years. So
Teams hate drafting tight ends in the first round for reasons I don't quite understand. Like obviously Kyle Pitts.
And he won't go fifth. Like I said, once he runs like 4.6 something, maybe not 4.6. I'm not really good with numbers. But once he runs a lower number than people think, I don't think he's. And someone's going to get a really good deal in pick 25 or something.
But like Kyle Pitts obviously went 4 overall, but it was because he was a unique freak athlete, unicorn, and by the way, could probably be X receiver in any offense in the league, and that itself is worth that pick.
Meyer is like what you think about a tight end.
Right.
That's Michael Meyer.
But for like a sort of traditional tight end like Meyer, teams hate drafting those guys high. I mean, almost all the best tight ends you can think of didn't go high. Like Gronk was what, a third rounder?
Yeah.
Travis Kelce, Darren Waller was like a sixth round wide receiver. Like these guys, they weren't coveted when they came out. Even you know, last year, Trey McBride, right, was being talked about as a really good tight end prospect, but it's like, but we're not taking him high. You know, we'll get him later. It's kind of weird to me how the NFL still not shuns the position, but doesn't seem to value it in the draft.
Helmet scouting. Notre Dame tight ends. Great track record.
I was going to say, haven't they had like a pretty good run of it?
Great track record. Yeah. Anthony Fasano, Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah.
Cole Kmet.
They've had a pretty good run.
Yeah.
Number 16, Washington Commanders. Broderick Jones, offensive tackle, Georgia.
Another team that has no, like, Charles Leno was actually okay for them this year.
Well, Charles Leno is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
People hate him because he loses, because offensive tackles that are only okay lose, but he's fine.
Yeah, but that was the early guy they had, though.
Right.
So then Broderick Jones is probably a good fit for them. Quarterback is interesting, though, obviously, with this team.
Do you buy this idea that they've been telling people that Sam Howell is actually going to be the starter?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do. I could.
Based off one game?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I just think that I'm very neutral about Sam Howell, but I could see them. I could see them going with him.
Huh. I just, in today's NFL, I would be amazed if a team was willing to hitch its wagon to a guy that didn't have a high draft prospect coming out after one performance, which was good, but was also very not like standard NFL offense-y, you know?
Do you think they're going to trade up? Do you think they're a candidate for trading up?
No, it feels like they're the team that's going to keep jumping on the veteran merry-go-round thing and try and find some answer to, you know, out there in the open. I don't know if they go aggressive and try and get an Aaron Rodgers or if they're like,
Derek Carr or something.
We'll take Derek Carr. How bad could that go?
I think this team is not bad with Derek Carr.
Yeah.
If you would go Derek Carr and you take, you know, let's say you take Broderick Jones. Receiving core is really good. They hit on Jahan Dotson last year. Obviously, Terry McLaurin is a really good player. So,
I mean, I'd be fine with them installing Sam Howell as the backup and rolling with, you know, Derek Carr or whatever is the starter. And then if Carr stinks at any point, you turn it over to Howell and see what you have. But the idea that after that one game, you'd be like, nah, sure, he's the starter, unquestionably, just feels wild to me. Like we're how many games into the Brock Purdy thing? And we're still like, I don't know, who knows? I don't know if he's the starter before the injury, obviously, but that's like exponentially more evidence than we have for Sam Howell.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think Sam Howell is the answer long term, but I could see them wanting to like, see what they have there. But like that means That means not being aggressive in the free agency market for a quarterback, which means
and being
I'm
going to
say the same three guys again. Jacoby Brissett, Andy Dalton, Jimmy Garoppolo.
And being like prepared to almost sacrifice the season if you're wrong. Like that's the concern.
Like Rivera is obviously on the hot seat.
Right, because they didn't want to see what they had in him at the end of last season because they were still alive, right? And then as soon as they weren't, it's like, all right, let's see what we have in Sam Howell for one game. But you can't. Then you didn't see enough because you only had one game. Number 17, Pittsburgh Steelers, Joey Porter Jr., cornerback, Penn State.
They need a corner. Again, this is a fit. Another press corner.
Family connection.
Family connection.
Joey Porter Sr., edge rusher for the Steelers back in the day. Joey Porter Jr. now rocks up as their cornerback. They do need corners.
Yeah. They might not have any corners on their roster after free agency. So, like, they're going to need a corner. Porter's a good player. Like, I haven't watched too much of him, but he's a very instinctive player. And, like I said, press man to man. So
I think they desperately need cornerbacks. Like, they didn't have a terrible group last year, but they clearly still have juice as a pass rushing unit when TJ Watt is still there. Yeah. And when you take like an okay group of corners and make them better, that makes everything look better. Just the sort of symbiotic relationship of those two is like a force multiplier. Number 18, Detroit Lions, Christian Gonzalez, cornerback from Oregon. It's a cornerback run.
Yeah. And this is where like we talked about the Lions before, where it's like, you would love to have a cornerback earlier probably than you would take the edge, but there just isn't one until now.
Right,
so now
second
you go and,
pick.
Yeah, so now you go and take Christian Gonzalez and you feel pretty comfortable about that. Mm-hmm. Could go almost anywhere with the Lions pick, but maybe if there's a run on corners like there is in this fantasy world that we're living in right now, then.
Yeah, I mean, I think corner is definitely a more acute need for them than edge rusher, but you're right, it comes down to sort of value of the position, value within the draft, like where is the top corner gonna go? And if you don't think it's worth that first pick, you might wait until 18 and still be able to get your guy and upgrade both positions. So,
yeah, they're bad at corner, man.
Yeah, I think overall, if the Lions come out of this draft with edge rusher and corner in the with their two first round picks, that's pretty good going, regardless of the order. Like number 19, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Keon White, defensive lineman from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, like it's interesting because all of a sudden, like they're getting a little old.
And this was before Tom Brady walked away.
Getting a little old. Joe Tryon Cheruiyah has not been.
He kind of came on a bit towards the end of the year.
But, and hopefully that continues. Yeah. But like, it's been an okay 2 years for him in the league.
Right. Matt, best.
Barrett on the other side is like, well, there's been really good years, but he's also getting up there in age. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm okay with them going Keon White. Now, I haven't watched Keon White because it kind of came out of nowhere and people are talking about him. Looking up his stats.
Yeah, it was like, an Old Dominion transfer before he went to Georgia Tech.
Good 2022, though. Just looking at the PFF grades, it was an okay 2022. It wasn't a great in terms of production via PFF. So like, there's other defensive ends who I would take before, but I think defensive end is fine, though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think defensive line makes a lot of sense for them. It hasn't been as good. Obviously, they dealt with a lot of injuries. Even the guys that are supposed to be consistent stars weren't, certainly this year. I think injecting talent into that group or youth definitely makes sense. Number 20, Seattle Seahawks, another team with their second first round pick. Byron Young, defensive end from Tennessee.
Yeah, and as we said, this is a need for them. I would have been okay with them, again, taking that defensive end if they could, if like Will Anderson dropped to them at 5, like that'd be great for them. That's probably not going to happen. So then you have, again, guys like Byron Young. I think there's other defensive ends that I like a lot in this draft class. So it could be anyone. And I'm very much needed someone outside of Nwosu.
They
said it the other day, Nwosu would be a really good number two. So let's find a number one then.
And I don't think it needs to be. Like, I don't think they necessarily need an edge on the other side if they find an interior guy that can dominate as well. Like, they just need another defensive lineman.
I expected so much more from their interior this year. I think that's really was an issue for them.
I think they just definitely need some upgrade along the defensive line wherever it is. So that makes sense. Number 21, the Los Angeles Chargers. Tuli Tuipulotu from defensive tackle from USC.
I just can't believe the Chargers continue to be... They you thought they fixed what they had to fix last offseason, and it just fell apart. So defensive tackle, they need it. go a lot of different positions. Linebacker's not great. Yeah. Edges, obviously probably their only unit that you're like okay with a healthy Bosa and Khalil Mack. Even not at the peak of his game, you're probably still okay there. Mm-hmm. But interior, man, it's, oh God, it's bad.
Yeah. The guys
from, like, right down the spine, interior and inside linebacker is so bad.
The guys that they brought in to fix that spine generally in the last couple of years just haven't worked out, whether it's Kenneth Murray at linebacker, whether it's the defensive tackles they brought in last offseason. They just haven't done what they were supposed to do to fix that. And I think, look, obviously some of it is scheme. Like, this is a team that intentionally sort of invites the run, but there's only...
But, like, you got to be able to get off a block once in a while.
Like, you can only be so bad at that before inviting the run is actually problematic to the defense overall. Yeah. And they've been over that line for the last couple of years. So they definitely need to fix that at some point. Baltimore Ravens, number 22, Quentin Johnson, wide receiver from TCU.
I mean, this has been the pick for a long time. Now, Rashad Bateman is the enigma here, right?
Renner loves this guy.
He loves Johnson.
Quentin Johnson.
Yeah, because he's like the X that Lamar Jackson has never had.
Right.
Right? It works perfectly. And I think Bateman's the type of player who can move around. And you still need two outside receivers on every play, right?
Right.
So,
and even, I mean, Bateman spent a lot of his time in the slot as well. Like, he's done that.
And we have the injury from Bateman last year. So Johnson is just like, they need a guy who can keep the safeties deep.
Yeah. And he is that guy. Like, he's such a fascinating, I don't love him, but he's a really intriguing prospect because of the size and the speed and what he could be. But it's very much, it's projecting quite a lot. Like, he's a weird receiver where, you know, 6'4", long, but isn't good at the catch point, or at least hasn't been. It's like,
that's what you were saying the other day about letting the ball come to you.
Yeah, he's not good at that. And now maybe he can get better at it, but there's not a great track record of those guys that aren't that player naturally becoming that player. But he has rare ability to catch the ball, turn upfield, and just outrun people. And that is valuable. So
yeah, I'd say that's pretty valuable.
But like, Renner sent me, you know, I asked Renner when I first watched him, I was like, is this guy really as good as you think he is? Because I'm kind of not seeing it. And then, like, randomly on a Saturday last week, he sends me this play and he's like, Q4, you know, 10:35 against Cal, like in 2018 or something, like some random play years ago. And he's like, there's only, you know, a handful of guys in the NFL that can do that. And it's like a simple sort of hook route or whatever. He catches it, immediately turns upfield, and then outruns the secondary for a touchdown. Like, all right, I'll definitely give you one thing that jumped out was when he catches those passes facing his quarterback, he's immediately back upfield, spins around and goes upfield really fast. He does that really well. The safety, however, for Cal, I would hope is now working for UPS, or at least no longer playing football, because it was awful. Like, he just randomly loped in the direction of Johnson and then fell on his face. Like, that, okay, yes, it was good acceleration, but that's not a touchdown against a good player. Like, he gets tackled. And yes, the turn up field thing was good, but I don't think that displayed the kind of otherworldly Randy Moss-esque, you know, speed that we're maybe selling him on.
Yeah, that's why I'm not... So you look, what pick is this, 22?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not mad at them taking
him. I think this
22,
is the right.
But I do think he's a second round type of talent.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the right kind of range for him. Like, I'm seeing a lot of people have him as the number one receiver in the draft, the guy that's going to go borderline top 10. Yeah, I don't think so. Like that.
No, I don't think so.
But if you do what this happens and he ends up sliding to number 22, I actually think that's it's a good fit and it's a good range for him.
The fit is perfect here. They got to keep drafting wide receivers until one hits.
As much as I don't love that him as a player, I think that's a good fit and range for him. Number 23, Minnesota Vikings, Emmanuel Forbes, cornerback from Mississippi State.
Look, I find this so funny during the season when we had all these discussions about the Minnesota defense, because they never played press. They played off. You know, that was just what they did on defense. They played off, and they were letting all these guys run across the field unabated, no problem. But it's like, oh, well, then they should play man. It's like, well, with who? Avec qui? like Peterson has become a great off corner because he's too old to like press and snap. So I think getting a corner, and it's funny. So Mississippi State, you know, under, I think, the Zach Arnett's the defensive coordinator, now the head coach, I think, not a big press team.
They've had a really interesting run of corners recently.
Yeah, but then the Martin Emerson's good play this year kind of fit in there in Cleveland, and him being able to play man-to-man coverage, like, gives me hope that Forbes
as
well.
And then Dancer was Mississippi State as well, right? Like, before him. So they've had this kind of interesting run of corners in the last few years.
And they need a corner, good fit. So I'm into it.
I think this makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Like the secondary, I mean, the whole defense needs upgrading, needs an injection of talent in the first round. Secondary in particular, like they were bad last year, plus everybody was hurt. You know, Andrew Booth, their second round pick, was injured. Obviously, Lewis Cine broke his leg in that brutal thing in London. Hopefully those guys coming back will help as well. But I would definitely say corner should be a pretty good starting point for them. Number 24, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Deontay Banks, cornerback from Maryland.
Yeah, again, corner. You know, they had Darius Williams there last year. So I don't know. I think the corners were fine. Well, Tyson Campbell was good.
Yeah.
So no problem there. And then I didn't think Darius Williams was that bad last year. So
when they moved him, I thought he was much better outside than he is inside, which is
where they moved him, I believe. Yeah.
Which is weird for, like, he's one of those guys, this happens every draft year, where he's tiny, right? So you get these guys to play outside in college, but they're small. So the NFL goes, well, that guy's a slot only. You know, slot players are small. You're that small. You play in the slot now. You know, like, but there's, the PFF data has sort of shown that there's a much, much tighter correlation between guys that have played well in the slot in college, succeeding in the slot at the NFL, and guys who didn't play in the slot in college, but have slot size and get shoved in there just because that's where we think they should play. So Troy Hill, I think, was like this as well. Troy Hill's a better outside corner than he is a slot corner, but he's a slot size. So he gets funneled back in there a lot of times. Darius Williams, I think, is a better outside corner than he is a slot guy. And maybe the Jags have realized that now. And if they have, they're actually in a pretty good spot when it comes to corners. They need a slot guy at some point, but they don't necessarily need like a first-round corner to come in and take that spot. Even forgetting Shaquille Griffin still there. Shaquille? I mean, it wouldn't hurt. I don't think you can ever have really too many good corners, but it's not a need, I would say.
No, I don't think it's a need.
Where would you go with this if you were picking their need?
You know, safety is interesting. Rashawn Jenkins, I think, played okay. Then you have like Wingard. I think there's another safety that I'm forgetting. So maybe safety. You could, you know, I don't know. I don't know enough with the draft as of yet to tell you if there's a guard
right
here to play opposite of Scherf.
This would also be an interesting spot. We've only had two wide receivers off the board, right? We've had Quentin Johnson and Jackson Smith.
That I think is, they need a number one. I was like pleasantly surprised by the what they could do with a bunch of number twos or number 2.5s this year, but they still eventually need a number one.
If they were able to, and I'm not necessarily, I don't want to necessarily label him as like this obvious X number one guy, but if they were able to get Jordan Addison at this spot, that would be
interesting.
Particularly as the third wide receiver off the board, that would strike me as one of the best value picks that we've had in this draft so far. Yeah.
Speaking of Jordan Addison.
Yeah, there you go. 25, New York Giants, Jordan Addison, wide receiver from USC.
Obviously, receiver. We've talked about it.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's good. He's a great route runner, separation, the whole thing.
Yeah. He reminds me a lot of, I mean, not, but he reminds me of Garrett Wilson last year, where you're like, he's just good at everything. I mean, he's there's no problems here. Like, we draft this guy in the first round. We don't think about it. We just get a good player. It's great. Maybe he, like, can he become, you know, this sort of dominant Julio Jones force as an X? Probably not, but who cares?
He's not big.
Like, that's what I mean.
Not a big player.
So if we're like shooting for, if the standard here is, can this guy become Jamar Chase? The answer is probably no. But it's like, can he become Garrett Wilson, come in and put up really big numbers and do well at everything? Yes. So I think for the Giants, that would be great. I think for one pick before, for the Jags, it would be great as well.
Fit works, player works. I think this would be a home run the Giants to take this guy.
Love that pick.
Need a receiver so badly.
Yeah.
Anybody who they could just count on, that who isn't like Isaiah Hodgins, who that's the guy they ended up counting on.
Right. We got, what, six more picks? But first, I want to tell you about the easiest and most fun way to spice up playoff football season and therefore Super Bowl season. It's Underdog Fantasy in their Pick'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with a higher or lower total than that in this week's game, and then you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your pick 'em entry, get all of your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. It's simple to get started. Head to underdogfantasy.com or download the app. Sign up with promo code PFF and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. Underdog Fantasy, promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. Right, where are we up to? Number
Dallas Cowboys.
26 with the Dallas Cowboys.
This one makes no sense to me.
To select Bijan Robinson, running back from Texas.
So I'm like, I don't care if you want to draft a running back in the first round. Like, I don't want to get into that discussion. Like, that's fine. I just, why a running back when you have Pollard for sure? Elliott, I'm not sure
Pollard's
what
Pollard's a free agent, right?
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So oh, this is the thing. You finally get out from the Zeke Elliott contract, and Pollard is hitting free agency, and they've never shown any commitment to Tony Pollard. So all of a sudden, it's like, well, if we're losing Zeke, let's replace him with our stud bell cow again.
I like Bijan so much that like I'm okay with it if you don't have Tony Pollard.
This to me is like the most Dallas pick possible. Yeah, sure. Nothing is more Jerry Jones than doing this. Even if they brought back Pollard, it's like, hey, Tony, congratulations. Here's a modest free agent contract. You're going to maintain the same role where you're buried on the depth chart behind a bell cow running back. We love you.
God, that would kill me.
But it would be the most.
Pollard is so good, dude.
It would be the most Jerry Jones thing in the world.
Yeah, that Cowboys have other needs too, man. I mean, like interior defensive lineman is big time pick for them.
Even Mel Kiper's description, like the first line is, quote, this just makes sense, right? Team owner Jerry Jones loves star running backs, going back to the days of drafting Emmitt Smith in the first round.
Receiver, go take a receiver. They need someone to take the pressure off Michael, CeeDee Lamb,
yeah,
who is not Michael Gallup, because I thought it was going to be Michael Gallup. Huge fan of Michael Gallup. And then this year coming off the injury,
yeah, which, good. I mean, maybe he's a different guy next year, a year removed from that injury. But based off last year, they definitely need that secondary threat to him. Yeah. I do think that if this is the way this draft unfolds, it is a hugely likely pick.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would do it. And I don't even, when I say that, I agree with you. It's not, I don't think there's, I would necessarily not take Bijan Robinson at 26 overall. But I think, for Dallas specifically, there's better ways of spending that.
100%.
27.
And spending, meaning like re-signing Tony Pollard.
Right.
That's the first thing. Right?
27, Buffalo Bills. Derek Hall, edge rusher from Auburn.
You know, the Bills roster is all of a sudden like up
not
for
looking
debate.
As great.
Yeah. Like all of a sudden they have holes everywhere.
Yeah.
And if they lose, I think they'll probably end up re-signing some of their better players that they can't really afford to lose. I think Poyer and Edmonds. Edmonds had a really, really good season next to Milano.
Yeah. But like, because of the money that they, like, they're in this world now with the Josh Allen contract that you're going to have to let some guys go. Yep. And I think Poyer would be an obvious thanks, see ya candidate, particularly in that defense. Yep. I think they're generally able to get good safety play out of almost anybody. And then Edmonds coming off that career year, how much of an outlier it was relative to everything else would terrify
still
me.
Young. You're still so young.
I know, but like, but do you want to get, like, because he's so young and because he just had that amazing year, you're going to be resetting the market with him as your linebacker. And I wouldn't want to give him that deal.
Right. Well, then you could just pick anyone at this position at 27.
Right.
It almost doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Guard, tackle.
I mean, that the unquestionably the best roster.
Safety, corner.
That
Defensive end outside of Von Miller. And who knows what Von Miller's future is looking like. Like, All of a sudden, like, this team is like cobbled together via Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, and
it's
like, that's
so amazing how fast
a receiver. They could go receiver here.
It's so amazing how fast things can unravel in the NFL. Like the Bills, if that's the case, the Bills will have gone from unquestionably the best roster top to bottom in the NFL heading into last season to you can literally draft anywhere on defense and it would be a good pick in the first round because you have holes everywhere.
Draft anywhere on offense, man.
That too, yeah. I mean, you could basically spend this pick anywhere except quarterback and it would make sense. Like in 9 months, that would have happened. It's
incredible.
Madness.
I can't believe it. And like that just goes to show how good Josh Allen has been. I think we kind of wrote him off for MVP, but you look at his statistical profile, it's like still.
But I think it also shows like how freaking hard it is to maintain any kind of championship window for any period of time. Because in 9 months, you can go from having the best roster in the league to having one riddled with holes and needing major offseason repair work. Like for a team like the Patriots, obviously with Tom Brady, to spend 20 years just reloading, yeah. reloading, and no problem. For Kansas City, the five straight AFC titles.
Chiefs might be that soon too.
It's insane. Yeah. And like, you know, the Browns had a really good roster for a couple of years, went all in with Deshaun Watson. And by the time he's there to take advantage of it, the whole thing might have come down around his ears. It's crazy. Number 28, Cincinnati Bengals, Dalton Kincaid, tight end from Utah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this is – Hayden Hurst is a free agent, so very possible. A lot of people like Kincaid. I haven't watched him yet. A lot of people like Kincaid. And, like, I think Daniel Jeremiah had him at tight end one over right. Michael Mayer, who had, like, tight end three or something. So clearly a really good player. And the Bengals kind of in this, we can say the same thing about the Bengals in the sense that they could kind of draft any position as well. But looking at it from a different lens, which is like, because they're good, they can draft any position.
Yeah. I mean, I think they would also, it kind of depends what they do in free agency, but yeah. I think they still need to keep working on that offensive line. I think what they did last year made a lot of sense. But obviously, A, injury showed you the issues if yeah. they have to go into the bench. B, Jonah Williams was the one guy that they didn't mess with last year. And we're like, no, we're good with him. He gave up 12 sacks this year. And as much as Lyle Collins was an upgrade, like he was really good in the run game, not great as a pass blocker. I wouldn't be 100% sold that you're set there either.
He got better as the year went on, but like.
He's also had like a pretty extensive list of injuries.
And like, yeah, now you're in another injury. Like, yeah. I agree. I think. Line they got
to
keep.
So I wouldn't necessarily like go crazy to replace him, but if you know an offensive tackle showed up, yeah. and you're like, I like
you're
this guy.
28th too. It's not like you're picking 12th. Like right. you can go and find a tackle at this position. You're probably all right with.
Yeah, 29 Denver Broncos,
New Orleans Saints.
Oh, you're right. It is the New Orleans Saints for the Sean Payton deal. This yeah. pick has now been traded three times already. Crazy. We haven't got to the draft yet. So the New Orleans Saints. So Mel Kiper had the Denver Broncos selecting Isaiah Foskey, edge rusher from Notre Dame. Who are we picking? Well, who are the Saints picking at this spot?
Saints are tough. I think defensive end is the way to go. So I guess it could be Isaiah Foskey.
Right.
I love Lucas Van Ness. So it's like, fuck it, trade package 29 and 41 and go up and get another defensive end like they always do. Yeah, you could go like the Saints roster is just like it's, man, all along defensive line. Cameron Jordan might be getting to the end here.
Yeah.
Marcus Davenport, up and down, still showing flashes that I'm like still excited about, but I don't know.
He's also like, he's never played more than 500 snaps, or he's played like just over 500 snaps one time. He averages like 400 and something, 30 pressures a season. Like for a dude, like this was the guy where you traded the two first round picks to go up and get him because he's so young and talented and blah, blah, blah. And every year he flashes just enough where you're like, yeah, that's still there. But at some point, it actually needs to go there. Otherwise, it's a lot of money or a lot of capital.
I mean, there's also Peyton Turner, who they took in the first round, who like hasn't really done much. Right. So like linebacker, they're okay. Safety with Marcus May, they're okay. Obviously, Tyrann Mathieu getting up there with age could be an issue. Corner, they're fine. They keep finding corners. You know, obviously Lattimore, but then they have like Alante Taylor and they have like Paulson Adebo and all those players.
It always feels like they could stand to upgrade that one, though, like the second corner.
Yeah. And then offensive line, like, man, Cesar Ruiz finally hit this year, which is great. You know, we always say it takes interior offensive linemen a couple of years. He hit in his third year. That's been great for them. But they need a tackle, I guess. Penning was injured the whole year, so I guess that was their first pick last year. So I don't know. You could even go receiver. Michael Thomas most likely not coming back. Jarvis Landry didn't really work out.
Mm-hmm.
You did find two rookies, Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, who's amazing.
Yeah,
but you probably still need that third guy. So maybe pick 29. Again, it's not like we're picking the top 10 here.
Right.
So pick 29 could be a receiver as well. There's a lot of things that they can do. They could go quarterback. I don't think 29th is where you want to go quarterback.
Right.
Because I don't think there's a guy here. But I've seen people talk about Hendon Hooker, maybe.
It's also like, it doesn't feel like a great place to try and gamble on the low first round quarterback thing.
That
doesn't always feel like one that's actually going to pan out particularly well. Pick number 30, Philadelphia Eagles. So this was, I think he did this with like the order using ESPN's football play index or whatever they call it. So number 30, Philadelphia Eagles, Brian Branch, safety from Alabama.
Love Brian Branch. Absolutely love Brian Branch. you know, we'll see. Their nickel situation has been fluid this year. Avonte Maddox, he gets injured. Josiah Scott played there. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was supposed to play. So Chauncey Gardner-Johnson played nickel in New Orleans, got traded because he didn't want to play nickel anymore. That's what I understand.
Right.
So they played him at safety. And then with all the injuries, they eventually had to move him to nickel. So they probably need a nickel. Branch is a really good player, man. I honestly think they go O-line. I think they got to eventually be proactive. This is the best offensive line in the league.
But they kind of did that. Because like, last year they got Cam Jurgens, right? So they've sort of theoretically future-proofed Jason Kelsey. Yeah. Like
Lane Johnson, though, with the injury.
Yeah.
Like that would be my – I mean, Dickerson's a young guy. My lad is a young guy. So maybe not. But like that's a good team, man. Like they don't have a lot of
needs. I mean, like, but this was, and this is why, and
especially at their second pick. Like we already just filled their need at defensive line.
And this is why this pick. Yeah, I mean, and
this is where you're going to get fired.
Exactly, and both picks are a classic like Eagles good process picks, right? Like this is why they've been so successful, that they've been able to get two first round picks, and in this particular draft, Mel's, they've added a defensive lineman because they just keep on doing that so they can roll seven deep. And then they add a guy, Brian Branch, that can come in and replace CJ Gardner-Johnson and keep on trucking on the back end. Like, or you could go, you know, with a number two corner and potentially move on from James Bradbury rather than pay him what he's earned based off this year. Like, it's another spot where like the Eagles almost can't do any wrong because they've put themselves in this situation. Final pick, number 31 in this scenario, Kansas City Chiefs. Zay Flowers, wide receiver from Boston College.
Obviously, receivers in need. Didn't really work out with MVS or Juju or Sky Moore, for that matter.
At least individually, but collectively it worked fine. Like, yeah.
Well, because when the quarterback is number 15, then a lot of things work fine. And the top pass catcher is a future Hall of Famer, then a lot of things are going to work fine.
Yep.
But yeah, they eventually need to. And I'll tell you what about the Chiefs in general. I was one of these people who my hot take, like I didn't actually believe it, but it was like my hot take, my bold prediction was that they weren't going to make the Super Bowl and they might not even make the playoffs. And it was based on the idea that, you know, they had some struggles on offense during 2021. And a lot of that was like, hey, Travis Kelce was not himself in 2021. He was himself in 2022. He was back to being that type of player. But eventually, maybe he's just the anomaly of all anomalies. I mean, he is because he's a Hall of Famer, but maybe he's even more than that, and he can play at a high level well into his late 30s.
He's like the same age as Gronk.
It makes no sense.
Gronk's been retired twice, and for a year the second time. Like, he's been done. They're 10 months difference.
Yeah, so for him to keep playing at this level is great for them, obviously. He's gonna turn 34 in the middle of next season as a tight end.
Mm.
700 more yards than any other player in the league over age 31.
Does that make you think like future-proofing tight end? I mean, I know two have already gone in this draft, but there's Luke Musgrave from Oregon State. Yeah. Maybe Kincaid.
I just think I'm okay with like receiving core in general, right? Like if the Kelce decline ever happens for real, and again, I'm now of the opinion that it'll never happen. then obviously you need some sort of receiver. And Zay Flowers is a good player, super fast.
That's also like, the tight end thing feels like one where you would be smart to future-proof that. Like, you know.
I will say they liked what they had out of 83 Noah Graves. Had a you know, good year or whatever.
Yeah.
He's not Travis Kelce, but.
Right. All right. So that's Mel Kiper's mock draft, the godfather of the mock drafts, the man with the best quaff in the business, even if Howie Long hasn't beat with the flat top. We're going to finish this draft show. We've had guys down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl all week long. All week they've been doing the individual practices. I'm a big fan of sort of what you can glean from Senior Bowl practices, from the one-on-ones, all that kind of stuff. So Mike Renner, Trev have been down in Mobile. They've been doing daily shows on the PFF YouTube channel, but we decided to get them to check in and give us a little roundup over what they've seen. So that'll be it for myself and Seth. We're going to pitch it right over to the guys in Mobile, and we will see you next week. You won't, but I will.
What's happening to
you're
me?
You're getting kicked out of the show. You're done. Man. Your usefulness has come to an end, and you are being sent packing for...
Literally packing. I have my suitcase upstairs.
The full Jerry curl to be back in the chair next week. And then we'll be in Phoenix for the Super Bowl. So thanks all for listening. Thank you, Seth, for showing up to do these shows. And we'll hear what the guys think of Mobile.
What's up, everybody? Trevor Sikkema, Mike Renner here with you in Mobile, Alabama to recap what we saw from the 2023 Senior Bowl. Mike, we're going to give a couple of players that really caught our eye from this week. Who's the first one that you want to shout out, a guy who you really think won the week?
It's got to be Tank Dell, the Houston wide receiver.
It's a good choice.
5'8", good way to start. 163. I get it. Small. But 6-foot wingspan, which to me is the more important number at wide receiver. That is... basically how much you can adjust outside your frame and haul in a football. So few times are you asked to really go completely up in the air and high point a ball. And truthfully, when he does, he's got a pretty high vertical. He's going to test very well at the combine. But the bigger thing was here down in Mobile, his ability to get off press coverage, which I don't think anyone touched him truly at the line of scrimmage. Guys were up
didn't
there,
feel like they did.
But they didn't touch him. And then his ability to just stop, sink, and cut on a dime. Like that ability is under... discuss when we talk about wide receivers. Everyone wants to say, oh, 40 time, 4.3 this, 4.2 that. Well, how much can you go from that 4.3 to a full stop? Tank Dell can do it in a blink of an eye. That's the ability I want. So the size, I am, yeah, a concern. Maybe not going to be a complete wide receiver, but in a role, it's going to be deadly.
Well, for a player who has those kinds of reps, the size is why he's not going to be a first rounder, yes, right? But like that ability is still there. He's still going to win in similar ways in the NFL. Yeah, physicality might give him a little bit of a fuss here and there, but he's still going to have reps where he's able to show off that speed, no doubt about it. I'll stick with wide receiver for my first guy, Michael Wilson, a guy who we talked about all week, the Stanford wide receiver. Now, I don't know if a lot of people out there listening to the show know who Michael Wilson is. We didn't know a ton about him. That's because he just didn't play a lot of football over the last couple of years. Only 14 games over the last three seasons due to injury. But man, when he was on the field in the Senior Bowl, day one, man, it felt like, rep one, he was standing out in every single way. He understands how to win at the wide receiver position. He gets that releases totally matter. And he had a variety of different releases getting off the line of scrimmage. He knows how to box guys out when he's getting into his routes. He knows how to really set them up well, to flip the hips, to kind of deceive them of where he's going, just to put his foot in the ground and turn the opposite direction. I felt like no matter what route he was asked to run, he was able to really succeed and gain separation on all three phases of a route. And so he was somebody that I definitely wanted to shout out as a big-time winner along the wide receiver spot as well. Because there were a couple of guys that stood out, but I feel like those ones were the big winners from the group. Who's next for you?
I was going to say, to add to Michael Wilson, though, 216 pounds. He's a big boy.
Yeah,
he's no spring chicken in a class full of, we're talking about Tank Dell in the 160s, some of these top guys. All under 200 pounds, he has a little different element to his game.
In this class in particular, that's going to stand out.
Yeah.
No doubt.
All right, next guy that I had, I'm going to go to the defensive line. I really liked what I saw from Carl Brooks, the Bowling Green defensive lineman. Now, I don't think he was far and away the best defensive lineman here by any means, but I think he has a skill set that is covetable at the NFL level because he is 6'3", 300 pounds, and the boy can move. I mean, he is nimble, very light in his feet, very good bend. You saw him, I think, better than any of the other defensive tackles here. When he got to the edge of an offensive lineman, he could turn the corner back to the quarterback's drop spot. That's a key skill to have for any pass rusher because a lot of guys can, you know, win that first contact battle, but then once you get to the side of the offensive lineman, they don't have, they're a little stiff and they just get pushed past the pocket. I don't think that's going to be the case with Carl Brooks. Wasn't the case at Bowling Green. Wasn't the case here. Don't think it's going to be in the NFL.
Yeah. No, I like that shout out as well. I'm going to shout out Will McDonald, the edge rusher from Iowa State. This is a player who I thought was just on a little on the lighter side. I wasn't sure how he was going to hold up against some bigger competition at the Senior Bowl. Man, the speed showed up. It continued to show up. I did not give it the respect it deserved going into the week, and he was somebody who consistently was able to attack the outside shoulder of really good offensive tackles, but even more so than that, he was able to show that he could counter. He knew how to counter. He knew the pass rush moves to get back inside. He knew the timing of when to do it. This is a player who I have seen mocked at the end of certain first rounds, and I was like, man, I feel like that's a little rich for Will McDonald, but after this week, I could see maybe a team really going after a speed rusher in that spot.
I think he, if you wanted to, could have a case against head coach Matt Campbell for lost wages because he had him at 4 and 5 technique in the Iowa State defense, which is an absolute crime. He should have been an edge rusher. He should have been a wide nine speed rushing off the edge.
Let him
if
stand
he would
up.
Have been, yeah. Put him in a scheme where he would have done that. He would have been a first rounder already. We'd be talking about him like that. But unfortunately, we never got to see that from
him
on tape.
No, so I wanted to make sure that I gave him a shout out there. What's another guy that you like?
Ooh, another guy that I liked here. Let's go to the offensive line. I'm going to the positions that I think are actually valuable here. The one I really liked along the offensive line is Steve Avila, TCU.
That's your boy.
Guard. He was off interior offensive line 3 heading into this draft class in the PFF draft board. I don't think he's going to rise because Osiris Torrance, the Florida guard, and John Michael Schmitz, the Minnesota center, those were 1 and 2 in the PFF board. They had great weeks as well.
They had good weeks.
But I think the sort of gap that I saw after those first two to Avila is gone. Those three, in any order you want to put them, are the 3 best interior offensive linemen in this draft class. I think all are going to be quality starters sooner rather than later. And I think Avila showed that. You saw him at left guard, center, right guard throughout the week of practices. Didn't look like a fish out of water at any of those. And then just the pure anchoring ability for a guard was as good as it got here.
I'll stick along the offensive line, but I'll go out to offensive tackle. It feels like it's been a while since we've seen him, but DeJuan Jones had an unbelievable day one, so much so that he didn't practice the other 2 days. And so he just turned so many heads. Look, first of all, he shows up 6'8", 375 pounds. This is a mammoth human being playing on the right side of the offensive line. It just felt like no one could get by the size and the length of him. It really, nobody could get into his chest. Nobody could get the better of him. And it just felt like he was totally dominant in so many different ways, using his strength to his advantage. I was worried about the footwork a little bit, right? Because he's just a bigger offensive tackle. I didn't think in his tape at Ohio State, he had the cleanest footwork. It didn't matter here, man. He totally dominated so many different types of edge rushers that tried to challenge him.
And one of my favorite things from him that I saw wasn't even when he was strapped on the pads. It was today and yesterday when he wasn't practicing, when he was just off on the side. He was calling out the moves that he was going to expect from the defensive lineman. He was telling other offensive linemen what to do. He was basically a cheerleader there on the sideline for his guys. It tells me he's a student of the game. Like, he actually is a guy who is going to be in the film room, going to be grinding, because he saw things at a high level there. And that's why he has kind of and is able to get around the fact that he's not the most fleet of foot for the offensive tackle position. But this guy knows ball, knows line play. That showed up again and again.
One last guy. Let's give one last shout out. Let's go for
one last guy. I'm going to go to.
What about your boy Adebuare?
I was going to go to the safety position. I want to give some love to Sidney Brown.
All right.
The Illinois.
That's a good call. I can't be mad at that.
I was high on him going into this. So it's hard to call him like a massive riser. I think he's somewhere in the day two range at the safety position. But his ability to go one-on-one out on the edge, I thought was, he looked better flat out than some of the corners in those drills, despite, you know, not having that background. Was more of a box safety at Illinois, but he's got 4.3 speed, some of the best speed in this class. He is jacked to the gills. This guy spends some hours in the weight room over
jacked.
The course of his Illinois career. And he's got a great build for the position. He's short, stout, but he's got long arms, and he affected a lot of passes over the course of the week. So I think Sidney Brown, he made himself some money.
There are a lot of good defensive backs. Jamie Robinson from Florida State, Tyreek Stevenson from Miami, Darius Rush from South Carolina. Yeah. I think a lot of these guys really made some money for themselves. Oh, man, who do I want my last guy to be?
Got to pick it.
Adetemiwa Adebuare, right?
Do it.
There you go. I got to pick him. He's the Northwestern defensive tackle. The build is so unique. He's right at 6'1", but he's got the wingspan. What's the wingspan?
6'10".
6'10". 6'10" wingspan for a guy who's 6'1", and he's playing on the interior offensive line, right? So he has that natural leverage of being smaller in height. He could sink those hips, get down into his stance, and really get that natural leverage when he fires off the line of scrimmage. And yet when he does and he gets his hands in the right place, the separation that he creates with that extension and with that arm length, it's devastating for a lot of interior offensive linemen. We saw that this week.
They look like Stretch Armstrong. You know, someone pulled his arms out just a little farther than they should have been. And it's like, that's a good build to have.
Yeah. No, he had a lot of dominant reps just because of that, especially one that we saw on day 3 where he knocked Jared Patterson almost clear off of the football field. Mm-hmm. So that almost.
He was a Feldman's Freaks List guy, too. So don't expect him to go to the combine and put on a show.
There we go. Those are a handful of guys that we were impressed with here from the 2023 Senior Bowl.